Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
Why would you walk away from a good, stable, happy life with two daughters graduating, one of them within a few days of this disappearance, graduating from high school, looking forward to getting them on to college, successful business, friends? That's over. You wouldn't walk away from that. Not without such a dramatic reason that I wouldn't have seen it.
Well, you know, when I was younger, it was always really hard. You know, we'd hear a certain rumor and my sister and my mom and I would always, you know, just jump right away and try to figure out who we needed to contact to find the most information. I feel bad saying this, but as time goes on, I guess you just kind of get numb to it maybe a little bit. And I just want an answer now. I don't think that my dad's alive. I just want to know what happened. That's all, you know? So, and I think my sister feels the same way. My mom has remarried and moved on with her life. I know that she just wants to put things to rest as well and be able to move forward and just to know, have some closure in it.
On May 27th, 1999, 42-year-old Dale Williams, a body shop owner in Nuclea, Colorado, got a phone call from a stranded motorist asking for assistance. Dale, being a well-liked and helpful individual, agreed to come to the aid of this stranded person, though this was not something that he typically did in his line of work. He specialized specifically in auto body repair. On his way to this motorist, Dale stopped and spoke to a friend of his at a local gas station, and he indicated to them what he was up to while he was out and about that day. But he never told them exactly who he was going to help. This interaction is the last confirmed time that anyone saw or spoke to Dale Williams. Later in the day, Dale's wife called to see where her husband was. It wasn't unusual for Dale to lose track of time when he focused on his work. But by the next morning, she was very concerned. She drove to Dale's shop, but didn't see any sign of him anywhere. This is when Dale's wife decided to report him missing. Dale's truck was found several weeks later in July of 1999. It was submerged in a swimming hole, but there was no sign of Dale anywhere. What happened to Dale Williams on May 27, 1999? This May, it'll be 20 years that Dale has been missing, and his family is still searching for answers. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 160 of The Vanished. Dale Williams' story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Here at The Vanished, I get consistent case submissions and episode suggestions. Last May, the family of Dale Williams reached out to me and asked if we would be able to cover his case. When I opened the case submission form, I instantly remembered watching the show Unsolved Mysteries growing up and seeing Dale's case featured on an episode. I had the opportunity to speak with Dale's older brother, Dick. Here's Dick talking about Dale in his younger years and his love of family.
Dale was a family person, and he had two daughters that he adored and gave every part of his life that he could to them. He gave the same effort to the little community, small town that he lived in. He spent a lot of his time helping other people out. He ran a business of his own. It was an auto body and repair shop. I think it was relatively successful. I don't really know how much, you know. Not very many people could come up with any negative thoughts, I don't think, about Dale, that he was well-liked by most everybody that I know of. Just a good, responsible citizen, father, husband type person. He ran with a group of friends that were all good kids from good families, and they all grew up together. A lot of them are still residents of the town. Don't recall him ever getting into any kind of trouble. I don't think he ever did. He went to a vocational training school to learn the auto body repair and car repair. Him and my dad went in partners on Dale's first project after he got out of school, was to repair a new Ford pickup, and they went in partners to buy the pickup and the parts. And that was his first project after he got out of school and started his own business. He was very close to my mom and dad. I mean, like a multiple times per day, they'd have conversation, coffee, or some sort of contact.
Nucla is a small town in the southwest mountains of Colorado, an everybody-knows-everybody kind of place. Dale disappeared back in 1999, and according to the 2000 census, Nucla had a population of just 734 people. Dale was well-liked in the community. Having seemingly no enemies, what could have happened to Dale that day? I also had the chance to speak with Tony, one of Dale's daughters, about his disappearance. Here's Tony speaking about the events of the day her father disappeared.
My dad is a body man, and he would work on cars and stuff. And he was having lunch and kind of working on the side with a friend named Tom Ross, and his son was there. And they ended up playing a game of darts, and my dad had a call came in, and it was from a stranded motorist. And Tom says that he felt like it was a female based on how my dad was talking to the person and things like that. Well, the motorist had said that they were stranded in Paradox near the Bedrock store and they needed help. So Tom heard my dad say, okay, I'll come out there with the wrecker. And then he was assuming that the caller said, oh no, I just need a jump. So maybe just bring your pickup. So then my dad said, okay, I'll just bring the pickup. And he hung up the phone and told Tom what was going on and that he excused himself. And then he left. He left his shop open. He left his car that he was working on, the hood up, the doors open. Everything was left under the intentions that he would be back very shortly. And Bedrock is about 20 minutes away from his shop, maybe a little bit more, maybe a half an hour, but it's not very far. I've heard that he stopped by to talk to his friend, Steve's wife, Tammy Lawrence, down at her business, which is Sterile Gas. He told her that her windshield that he was supposed to replace, he would have to do it later, but he would get to it. And then he went on his way. And as far as I know, and anybody else knows, that Tammy was the last person to talk to my dad before everything happened. So that is how the disappearance happened, I guess.
While I was speaking with Tony, I wondered when it was noticed that her father was missing.
He didn't come home that night, and my dad was a workaholic. He would work until the very early morning hours. So him coming in that one or two really wasn't out of the norm for him. But he would definitely be home, you know, around no later than three. And that was even when I was living at home going through high school, that was a normal occurrence. So my mom woke up and my dad still wasn't home and she got worried. So she contacted my grandmother, my dad's mom, and they went driving around looking for him. They went to his shop. It was unlocked. It was exactly how he left it. No sign of him, nothing. And then so they started searching some more. And I believe they reported him missing later in that evening. It might have been in the afternoon, but it was the next day.
Tony was a college student at the time of her father's disappearance and was not immediately aware of what was going on at home.
I was going to school in Delta, and I had to call my roommate for something, but I can't really remember what it was. I had called her to talk to her about something, like I needed her to bring me something to school or something like that. And she asked me if I had heard from my dad. And I said, no. Why? And she said, your Uncle Tom called and said that they can't find him. And so that's how I found out. I left school immediately and we drove over the mountain on this dirt road between Delta and Nuclear. It goes directly over the mountain over, it's called 25 Mesa. And so we were looking along the way for any sign of anybody, like a car going off the road or anything. My dad would go to Delta quite often to see his cousin, which was, I called my Uncle Tom. So Uncle Tom was his cousin and they both owned body shops. So he would go over there quite often to see my uncle since it's only about 40 minutes away.
Dale's brother spoke about where he was when he learned that his brother had disappeared.
The first thing I remember is my mom calling me and telling me that he hadn't come home the night before, and which was totally out of character. So we kind of made a little quick community organization to start looking for him. And that search party grew to probably a couple hundred people right away. It was a holiday weekend, and a lot of the people canceled their holiday plans to join the search party. I kind of got designated to coordinate things with between the search party and the authorities. The authorities didn't get involved right away. Before they got very involved anyway, it was several days, a couple of days. So we were kind of on our own to organize and search and you know, plan these searches. It's a very, very small community. 600 or 700 people live there. And not much representation from the law enforcement. And of course, we were unsuccessful at finding anything. And then when the law enforcement did get involved, they pretty much labeled it initially as a missing person, but as they got into it, did whatever they do, they qualified that missing person statement with skepticism that it might be a criminal involvement, or you might be the victim of a criminal action. And then hasn't been much progress beyond that point. They do say they've got a big case file and they've got a lot of witnesses, interviews, and they've got a considerable amount of material, but they don't have anything that definitively says if or what happened.
When a person goes missing, the first thing that is typically done is retracing the missing individual's last known whereabouts. We know that Dale had gotten a phone call from a stranded motorist on the morning of May 27th. But who called and where did they call from? A few rumors would fly around about this phone call to Dale.
I've heard multiple things from the police. So I've heard that the cell phone was stolen, and I've heard that the cell phone wasn't stolen at all, and they don't know how it became known as stolen. They never were able to locate the person. They, I'm guessing they think it was like a burner phone, like just one that you buy at the gas station or whatever. But we don't know anything about the cell phone. Bedrock is placed in this really deep canyon, and it's kind of in the middle of nowhere. It's between, first of all, there was hardly any cell phone service at all in Nuclea Naderita. You had to be up on a plateau to use a cell phone, and that was in roaming. So Bedrock is placed in a valley, and the cliffs are quite tall. Those mountains are, they're pretty tall through there, and it runs through a river. So I do not think that there was any cell phone coverage in Bedrock.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Even though it was 1999, I was curious as to whether or not Dale owned a cell phone. They weren't as common or used as much as they are today. According to Tony, her parents did have one, but rarely used it or carried it with them.
My dad did have a cell phone. They only used it for emergencies, though. And I don't, to be honest with you, I don't even remember them using it ever. I think they just had it. They would only take it like out of town or something like that. They stayed in my parents' bedroom for the longest time.
Tony told me more about how her dad's truck was found and more about the area where it was recovered.
They found his truck several weeks later. Family, the Bradys, they were new to the area, and the oldest son, his name is Levi, were very good friends, obviously, because of this particular incident. He was swimming, or they were fishing, and his lure got caught on something. So they swam out into the river, and he was standing on the hood of the truck, and they thought it was a refrigerator. So he swam down to unhook the hook, and they figured out that it was a car. So when he came back up to get some air, he went back down, was able to pull the dash cover out of the window and bring it to surface. And it says Pro Body Shop on the dash cover. So they ran to Umetco, which is some like mining business that was there, to call the police. And Levi said he tried to get into the glove department to try to get the registration out, but he wasn't able to get in there. They said that the truck was put in running with the ignition on, the windshield wipers were on, and the window was half rolled down on the driver's side. And I believe the headlights were on as well. I could be wrong about that. They had to pull it with a backhoe, and I believe there was quite a bit of damage from them pulling it. It was under 13 feet of water, and about 3 or 4 feet of that was silt in the river. This was a water or a swimming hole, and it really only locals know about this swimming hole. Like, somebody from out of town wouldn't just drive down the road that it was off of and say, oh, let's go swimming here. It looks nice. It's definitely a place where people would have to ask somebody, hey, we want to go swimming or fishing. Where can we go? If they are from out of town, or if they were locals, they would know about it.
Dale's brother Dick was able to give us some more insight on the truck.
We did some forensics with plant life down at the river and sediment and weather, cattle drives. Most of it, the intent was to establish a time and date that the vehicle went in the river. And I think we pretty well narrowed that down to within a 24 or 36-hour time period. Well, this particular truck was a four-wheel drive. It could be put in what's called low range, which moves very slowly. And evidence suggests that it was put in gear. Somebody walked along the side of the vehicle and steered it into the river while it was running.
After the authorities had recovered Dale's pickup truck, it became apparent that certain precautions weren't taken to ensure that all evidence of what was inside the truck was preserved, and that some of Dale's belongings were missing.
So one of the big things that Levi has always said had happened is when they were pulling the truck, there were things floating out of it. And he specifically asked the investigators that were there if they wanted him to swim downstream and retrieve them. And they told him no, that they didn't want him to. They had enough evidence with the truck. And I always thought that that was a little weird, but they did not set up anything to catch the debris or anything floating out of the truck that I know of. There was also a toolbox that my dad had bolted to the back of the truck in the bed, and that entire toolbox was missing.
One interesting thing that happened after Dale disappeared was that, according to Tony, as the search for her father progressed, some of his tools, possibly ones that would have been inside his missing toolbox, were found thrown along the side of the road in the opposite direction of where Dale's truck was found. The family believes that whoever was involved in Dale's disappearance did this to throw the police off.
So the highway that the Bedrock store is on, if you go, I'm going off in memory here on directions. So if you go south of that highway, you're in this kind of like very mountainous, hilly kind of zone. There were several tools that were strewn about there. And most of my dad's tools, he had etched his initials on. So my mom would have to identify them. And if they, you know, obviously if they had his initials on them, then she would be able to identify them very easily. But my dad was also kind of the guy that he would go to auctions in Grand Junction and just buy a lot of whatever it is. And a lot of those lots had just tools upon tools upon tools. So he would pick his favorite tools and throw them in the toolbox and they would be there. I kind of felt like it was to throw off any authorities, to have them look the opposite direction, maybe, because it was the complete opposite direction of where the truck was found.
What would later come to light is that Dale and his wife had assisted a friend and her young son in moving out of her home. According to those closest to Dale, this woman was in an abusive marriage and needed help to get away from her husband. So in the middle of the night, Dale and his wife took the woman and her son to a safe and undisclosed location to get away from her husband while he was out of town. Dale and his wife did not speak of what they had done to anyone. But when the husband returned, he knew they were involved in helping his estranged wife leave him. When confronted by him, Dale and his wife denied knowing where she was. Dale and this man had been friends, but this seemed to fracture their relationship. A while later, Dale's shop was broken into. Pictures of Dale, his wife, and the now broken up couple were found ripped to pieces, and bullets were scattered throughout the shop. It's strongly suspected that the husband was responsible for this act of vandalism. However, no charges were ever brought against him. Another strange thing happened prior to Dale's disappearance. Dale's wife ran a video store at the time. Remember back when we had those video rental stores? They had drop boxes to return your videos after hours. Well, weeks after Dale's shop was broken into, she found Dale's gun in the night drop box at the store. Investigators believe those two incidents are connected, that the person who broke into Dale's shop scattered the bullets, tore up the photos, and took Dale's gun. Then, they later dropped it in the video store drop box. In hindsight, it appears that these incidents could be related to Dale's disappearance. After the news of Dale's disappearance made it through Nucla, people came forward and reported sightings of Dale's truck the day he went missing.
There were a few reports that said that they saw it in front of his shop around 2:30 in the afternoon, I believe, the same day that he disappeared, which would have been the 27th of May. And then somebody else had said that they saw it at the Family Market, which is the store, grocery store in Naderita, later in the evening. But neither one of those were ever confirmed. There's been, you know, people who've said that they saw somebody who looked like him. I've had friends that have said that they swore they saw him driving down Grand Junction, North Avenue. And so they chased down this car, and it turned out not to be him. I did end up with a message in 2015. Some random guy had sent us some pictures of this homeless man. And he's like, I took these pictures of this homeless man on 16th Street Mall, and I was showing my friends and telling them his story. And they're like, dude, there's this guy that's been missing for years who looks an awful lot like this guy. And he's like, well, what's his name? And they're like, it's Dale Williams. And he's like, this guy's name is Dale Williams. And so he ended up getting in contact with us. And the pictures are very similar, but the cops, they did investigate and try to find that guy. And I don't think that they actually found him. But we, between my sister and my mom and I, we really looked at those photos. And my dad had an accident when I was younger where a type of machine shaker thing that shakes up Bondo putty, it exploded and it slit his neck open underneath his jaw. So he had some severe, you know, scars and stuff like that. And none of these pictures had any of his, you know, identifying marks or anything like that. So that I think that those were ruled not my dad.
In any case of a missing adult, we have to consider the possibility that someone walked away from their life. I was curious if Tony believed her father would leave on his own accord and purposely disappear.
The only reason that I think that he may have done that is if somebody was threatening to harm my, you know, his family. And at that point, I don't even know. I don't even know if he would have left. I think that he would have gone to the police. He was more of that straight and narrow kind of guy. But I do not think that he would have left my mom and my sister whatsoever. My sister was still in high school, and you know, he was very devoted to us girls. And at the very least, he loved having kids.
Dick agrees with Tony. He doesn't believe that Dale walked away from his life.
Why would you walk away from a good, stable, happy life with two daughters graduating, one of them within a few days of this disappearance, graduating from high school, looking forward to getting them on to college, successful business, friends? That's all. You wouldn't walk away from that. Not without such a dramatic reason that I wouldn't have seen it. mainly because of what we didn't find. We didn't find any indication that he would have walked away. He had no credit cards, charges, nothing like that going on. It's just like somebody turned off the switch and nothing moved forward after that.
Thinking back to Dale's pickup truck, I asked Tony if there was any indication that Dale was inside the truck when it made its way into the swimming hole. Could it have been some kind of accident?
It was turned very sharp in the angle, and they believe that it was kind of walked in, so to speak, at a low speed. But the tires were turned, I believe they were turned all the way to the left going in. So, I mean, it's a flat land. It's level. It kind of comes down on a little bank, you know, but the whole road is a gravel dirt road. So if you're unfamiliar with it and you're driving too fast, you could go on the roof rack, but most people don't even know that that road is down there unless they're locals.
Given that so much time has passed since Dale went missing, I wondered if there had been any recent developments or tips on the case.
A girl who worked at the sheriff's department when my dad disappeared texted me on Messenger, and she's like, I got this comment on my wall, and she sent me a screenshot of it, and from a woman, and she had posted her phone number, and she said she had some information that she wanted to share with her. So I said, can you please call her and then let me know what she said, and I'll let my investigator know. And she said she would, and she came back and said that these two girls had been down in the river swimming, and they had come across a leg bone with some fabric attached to it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, oh my gosh. So I sent it right away to Brooks, and he's in Denver and was doing something. And initially I just sent in the information to contact the woman. And then as soon as I heard back from my friend on what that information was, I sent him that, and he called the deputy, and I guess that deputy had told him that they did run that bone through forensics, and it ended up being an animal bone, but they don't know, the fabric was overalls, and they don't know how that was placed there or whatnot, but my dad wasn't wearing overalls, so it wasn't the, you know, it wasn't the smoking gun we were looking for, but at least it was, you know, somebody turned something in. So they are, you know, it's still fresh in everybody's minds, I think. I'm glad that, you know, they were brave enough to call the police on this, because it just seems like it is just lock and sealed on information down there in Nuclei. You would think that somebody would just get drunk in a bar and just spill it or something like that. But everybody that's done that has just kind of, you know, it's always, I feel like it's becoming like a running threat now. People will get drunk and say, oh, you better be careful because I'll do to you what I did to Dale Williams, throw you down a mine shaft. And it's like, guys, come on. We've heard this like 300 times. Let's come up with a different threat for a while. I've heard the mine shaft thing probably 10 times from 10 different people. And, you know, every time I hear it, I send it over to Brooks, and he's like, oh yeah, we already talked to them about this. No credibility whatsoever. And it's really damaging to the case. It just takes up time and resources and very discouraging to everybody.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. There's been a rumor going around since Dale disappeared that he was thrown down a mine shaft, and that's why his body has never been recovered. Dale's brother Dick has his own thoughts on this rumor.
If I was the person doing it, I don't think I would use a mine portal for a disposal area. My thought connected to that, all that thought train would be, if I was going to dispose a body, I would drop it down the vent shaft that goes into the mine. Then it's way back. There's no evidence of enter or exit. And I think if that's what happened, if it was left in a mine, I think it was put through a vent shaft. That's why there's never any evidence of entry or exit into those mines. Most of those mines have since been sealed off permanently. Anybody using that method would probably know they were going to be sealed before too long, and that would be an advantage you'd have. One common rumor was that maybe he had become aware of or walked up onto a criminal action like a drug deal, or some people thought smuggling illegal aliens from Mexico. There was quite a bit of speculation of having met with a demise resulting from somebody else's criminal activity.
Something strange occurred after Dale went missing. Typically, when someone disappears, those looking for them print off missing persons flyers and distribute them around the surrounding area to help aid in the search. This happened when Dale Williams went missing. However, someone was tearing down the posters. Why would someone want to tear down a missing persons poster? There could be many reasons, but the first thought that pops into most people's minds is that this individual didn't want Dale found because they had something to hide.
You know, they did this huge thing when, after my dad disappeared, there was a search party and everything. The CBI printed up these posters. They were hung everywhere. And they happened to go into a little post office, and my mom noticed that somebody was taking them down. And so she'd go get the mail and she'd bring a poster and she'd hang another one up. And the next day it would be down again. So she, you know, just keep repeating this. And it's kind of funny because I was listening to a podcast 2 weeks ago where a family ended up having to do this with somebody else. They would put up a poster and then that person would take it down and they put up another one, and it just went on and on. It kind of reminded me of our own case. Well, my mom requested a surveillance camera be put in that post office.
We've actually heard about this happening in other cases, but they were able to do something unique in Dale's case and put up a camera. The surveillance video showed the estranged husband of the woman Dale and his wife had helped move as the one taking down the posters.
He was taking down those posters, and he really have any real explanation for it. They just wanted them down, I guess. So There's no reasonable explanation. I don't know exactly what he said or what excuse he came up with or what it was, but yeah, they're like, he was the one taking him down. So that has since ended, of course, but you know, he wasn't charged with anything. They have no proof of anything other than him taking down these posters.
I asked Toni if she felt as though law enforcement had done the best they could when it came to her father's disappearance.
And you know, the initial investigation, I have really mixed feelings on this because our investigator now, he says that they did a really thorough job and blah, blah, blah. And you know, it might just be because I was really young at the time. I was only 19. And so obviously I'm going to take things super personal and not look at it from a professional standpoint on how investigations are actually conducted. I just wanted answers and I just wanted it now. And I didn't care about the processes. I just, you know, things needed to happen and I didn't think that they were happening fast enough. But I really felt like that at the time it was just kind of drug along, you know, maybe we'll go check this out, maybe we won't, kind of thing. But, you know, like I said, I was really young, and so I don't know if that's how it actually was. That's just how it felt like.
It's understandable why Toni feels this way. When someone you love goes missing, your emotions are high and you just want answers. It appears that, at the time, investigators did their best. However, one thing struck me as odd when it came to the initial investigation. Toni and her sister were not questioned about their whereabouts or anything of the sort until 2013, 14 years after their father had disappeared.
My sister and I were not interviewed until 2013. And the investigator now, Brooks, he's who questioned me. Not until 2013. Nobody even asked when the last time I saw my dad was, or where, or what his state of mind was, or anything. Nothing. Neither one of us girls were questioned.
Luckily, the Williams family currently has an investigator on the case that is very helpful and keeps an open dialogue with the family consistently about the current status of Dale's case.
Brooks has been wonderful. He's really done such a really, really, I can't say enough good things about Brooks Bennett. He's attentive. He answers questions thoroughly. He will call us if he senses, you know, any emotion in our emails or anything like that, just to make sure we understand. He is an all-around really excellent investigator. But everyone before then, and I think that Greg Heiler probably was an okay investigator too, but again, he never questioned me. He never questioned my sister. None of them did. So it was really kind of weird because I know that there was one of the investigators that was head of the case pretty early on, maybe like 4 or 5 years in, he was framed with some child porn and fired. And then another one moved up to northern New York or something like that really abruptly. It was really kind of weird. It was like they just couldn't keep anybody on the case at all. They would just leave or something would happen, or it was really bizarre.
Towards the end of my conversation with Toni, I asked if any person, especially her father's former friend, had ever been officially considered a suspect in her father's disappearance.
To be honest with you, I don't know if they really consider him a suspect at this time either. I know that he was questioned. I know that he took 2 polygraph tests and passed them. And I know that he has an alibi. So, you know, whenever my friend Aline, who was very close to my dad, Aline was our neighbor. She pretty much had a good hand in raising my sister and I. She babysat us for years. So Aline and I will, when she hears something, she'll call me and she's, you know, we'll try to put our detective hats on and kind of theorize what happened, if it was this person, or, you know, if this rumor were true, where could we go with it from here, you know? But everybody that we have reported to Brooks says they had nothing to do with it whatsoever. It was just a rumor mill. So that is frustrating. And I did hear from my sister, but I don't know where she got this information. So I'm not sure if it's entirely true. But she had told me that the ex-friend had put a restraining order on my sister, my mom, and I, you know, not to be, as if we would want to be around him in the first place, but yeah, we had a restraining order against us put on us by this person. You know, that's one of the things that really makes me very, very nervous about anybody really diving too much into him, is because he still lives in the same town that my mom lives in.
Despite the fact that there is currently no one labeled as a suspect or person of interest in Dale's case, his brother Dick is hopeful that things will eventually move in that direction.
Well, yeah, there is one thing I would like to share. And it is, recently, I stay in real close touch with the agents at Colorado Bureau of Investigation. And recently, they've gone down another road that has some promising facts that might make somebody really uncomfortable if they were to hear that the CBI is on a new path and a new mindset, and probably has some new people to talk to. They've been re-interviewing people and comparing previous interviews with other ones, and they found some discrepancies that leaves the door open to a new event.
While researching this episode, we spoke to a representative from CBI, whose identity we were asked not to share. There wasn't a whole lot of information they could tell us, but I will tell you what they did say. They still consider Dale's case an open and active investigation. And even though it's been almost 20 years, they are still following any leads that come in. If you were to go look at the area where Dale went missing, you'll see that outside of the little town of Nucla, the area is vast and mountainous. They acknowledge that they've heard the rumors that Dale was put into a mine shaft, but there are many, many mine shafts in the area. They can't go searching every single one because they don't have the resources, nor do they even know where all the mine shafts in the area are. As Dale's brother mentioned, many of the mine shafts are closed off now. If they get a tip about a specific area to search, they will go look there. They're asking anyone with information about Dale's disappearance to please call the CBI Grand Junction office at 970-248-7500. One last thing that I'd like to share about Dale's case is something that Toni told me in an email after I had interviewed her. This is something that she didn't learn until years after her father had disappeared. Back then, Toni worked for a drive-in, and on the day that Dale went missing, an unidentified man showed up at her work looking for her. When they told the man that she was off that day, he walked across the street and talked on a payphone for about 15 to 20 minutes. This could be completely unrelated, but maybe it isn't. Could someone have targeted Toni, possibly to hurt Dale, but she wasn't working that day and they made a change of plans? We can't be certain, but it's just another mystery of this case. So what happened to Dale Williams on May 27th, 1999? Was the person who called his shop in actual need of help, or were they trying to lure Dale out to a secluded location? Was the caller a woman, as his friend had assumed? If it was, does that mean that it's possible that more than one person knows what happened to Dale? Did someone get a woman to call Dale, knowing that he would come out to help, even though this wasn't his typical line of work? Was Dale's former friend involved in his disappearance? Or did Dale just happen upon a bad situation at the wrong time? If his former friend had been the caller, you'd think that Dale would have recognized his voice. May 27th, 2019 will mark 20 years that Dale has been gone. But his family is hopeful that they will find answers and get justice for whatever happened to him. At the time of his disappearance, he was 42 years old, around 170 pounds and 5 foot 7 inches tall. He had blue eyes and brown hair that was graying. Some distinguishing marks that Dale had include a birthmark under his left jaw and scars under his chin and on his jawbones from a prior accident.
I think maybe at this point in my life, I just want to know what happened. I mean, justice is, of course, important to me, but if it was one or the other, I would rather know what happened than, you know, if this, somebody was like, you know, if I don't know if this is how it works or not, but I watch a lot of true crime. And, you know, they're like, oh, well, if you tell us what happened, then, you know, this will just kind of make it go away. And, you know, I think that I've kind of reached a point where I would probably be okay with that.
I think I would rather just find bail, but I would qualify that and say that if somebody came forward, I would appeal to the district attorney or somebody for some leniency for the fact that they finally came forward, or maybe there's a motive that's would justify some leniency. Maybe there's a temporary insanity thing going on, something like that. I would support leniency in exchange for some forthright conversation.
I feel like we would have an answer by now, at least. And the sad part is that my dad was 42 when he disappeared, so it's been 20 years almost, you know, so pretty soon anybody that was involved is going to be dead, you know, pretty soon, or moved. A lot of people have moved away from the town. Tom Ross doesn't live there anymore. Greg Hall doesn't live there anymore, which was his friend. There's been people that I thought, you know, may have some information. They just hadn't come forward yet. They ended up, you know, dead from a drug overdose or something like that.
It's a close family-style small town, mostly farmers and ranchers. At that time, the mining industry had caved in, and there was quite a bit of shuffle for people to get new jobs and some people leaving town. Quite a bit of chaos over the mine closing, but it affected the town pretty deeply. Everybody had that on their mind. Being a small town, everybody's somehow intertwined with somebody else or their job or their family or something like that. So it was a universal thread in the community that kind of bound them together. We've had several tips on human remains that turned out to be, one of them was an Indian burial ground. One of them they never did account for was not Dale's remains. DNA proved that. We've had tips from psychics. We've had tips from people that want to remain anonymous. Actually, we just not had too much success on any getting any good tips. Most of what we've had to rely on is discrepancies over the years. I think their hands are terribly tied right now. The case got passed around so much initially that I don't think it was quite a while before there was any just one team involved and working on it. To get people up to speed and started and then change to another agency or another team or something, I think it encumbered them quite a bit.
That brings us to the end of episode 160. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke to us for this episode. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from Illinois. Thanks for listening. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.